The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to the workshop on thinking. Now, our whole theme this year has been on thinking. And for this time, this workshop, I would like for us to think through geometry and how we use our thinking skills in geometry, because that's really what geometry is all about. As we think of how we approach problems for problem solving, for example, whether we're doing an extensive high school proof or whatever it may be, we want us to be able to think. First of all, I'm indebted to various sources, as most of us are. There's a book entitled Mathematics is God Silent. How many of you have read that book? Or used it as a resource? I highly recommend it, although I will admit I haven't read it cover to cover. It's pretty heavy reading, but I found it very interesting. Again, as I mentioned in the introduction upstairs, I'm not going to be able to teach you all you need to know to teach geometry, but I'd like for us to at least whet our appetite at some of the extra things that are out there that we can include in our geometry classes, whether it be middle school, whether it be high school, or whatever. And just a word for the CLE Sunrise Edition, we do begin geometry skills a lot younger than some curriculum providers, and so we have those development sheets, those black line masters that I talked about at just before lunch, to help those coming in if you're switching a curriculum to COE to maybe help you in that. In the book that James Nichol wrote, he quoted yet another author by the name of Larry Zimmerman, and he said, "If mathematics is the basis of creation, its nature reveals us of God, and its purpose is to glorify God." We want to glorify God. And so the Christian teacher must desecularize math. Now, what is simply meant by that is this. Sometimes we think that, oh yes, we teach Bible in Bible class, and we teach about God. And we teach about God in science because He's the Creator. But God is also in math. And I would just like for us to make math a Bible subject so that we can see God in all that we do in math, just as we do in Bible class or history class or science class as well. James Nichol further said, two objectives for teaching math, and I'm including that here in geometry. He said, biblical Christian mathematics describes the wonders of God's creation. And if we forget everything we learn here today, I want to focus on God's creation, the wonders of God that are out there in creation is just so marvelous. And then number two, you may not have thought of this, but biblical math reveals the invisible attributes of God. It reveals the invisible attributes of God. Let me begin. First of all, the word geometry comes from geo, which means earth, and metria, which means measure. And so basically what we're doing is measuring the earth. Now, when we're measuring the earth, we're measuring a lot more than what's on the earth. We're measuring the little things, the length and width of a piece of paper or the desktop or the floor space if you're doing floor covering or something. All of this is working together. We are measuring parts of something on the earth. And then they're measuring out of space as well. I don't know if you followed or heard about that man that jumped out of a balloon at 24 miles up and reached speeds of 800 some miles per hour. I don't know what that is in kilometers, but a tremendous speed. Broke the sound barrier and just, you know, as he dove down to the earth. Well, there was a lot of measurement involved in that experience. I'm not sure how wise it was or how good it was, but he had some measurements involved. A few things about measurement and about geometry. We talk about size, we talk about space, we talk about how things relate to each other. We talk about geometry and art. We talk about architecture and engineering. As I mentioned, I recently was in Australia, and why I didn't get to visit it, but the Opera House in Sydney, I did some research on that, and the Opera House in Sydney, after it was designed on paper, they then went to build it, and the things that were called for were not practiced in building, and so they had to develop building techniques in order to put from paper to real. And so that was quite a work of geometry. It's found in spatial reasoning, our problem-solving skills, how all this fits together. Now, of course, in lower grade math, we talk about and we focus on identifying shapes and solids. Probably starting in first and second grade, we talk about circles and triangles and squares and rectangles and so on. So that's laying a foundation for what they will learn in geometry. We then go on to properties and relationships. When you have two lines at a 90-degree angle, we call them perpendicular. So we go from lines, we go to planes, to space, and I'll identify a few of those. And so these are things that we're studying while we study geometry that we may not really realize what all we are learning as we go through those steps. So geometry really has a lot of properties and things to teach us. So why do we study geometry? Let's look at some reasons for studying geometry. And the one that I like to highlight today is it points us to God. Geometry, believe it or not, points us to God. And I'd like that to be a highlight for us today. It points us to God. We're surrounded by space. We're surrounded by the shapes of things. As I look at these cabinet doors and I look at the doors going in and out of the classroom or the pillar here holding something up or the chalkboard, etc. These are all shapes that have something to do around us. The very planet we live on, for example, is situated in a universe that is full of interesting stars surrounded by other planets. In fact, God tells us in Psalm 147, verse 4, He telleth the number of the stars. He calleth them all by their names. He telleth the numbers of the stars, telleth them all by their names. We look further in Amos chapter 5, verse 8, another verse. Seek him that maketh the seven stars in Orion, and turneth the shadow of death into the morning. There you have the sun coming up in the morning. Maketh the day dark with night, that calleth for the waters of the sea and poureth them out upon the face of the earth. There you have God working through, drawing water up out of the sea and pouring it out on the face of the earth. The Lord is his name. And so as we study this, we are worshiping the God of creation. Some further reasons. Spatial understanding as we study how area relates to space and its position and its size. And I'm going to go through some of this rather quickly because I tend to run out at the end and I'd like for us to have a little time there. In other words, we study the need of how things relate to each other. And then we look at numbers and measurement. How to apply the relationship of length and width between shapes and sizes and so on. Visual ability. Some of us think in pictures. Some of us learn by hearing. But those of us who are visual, we like to see pictures. We like to see sketches. We like to see maps. And I don't know what kind of a traveler you are. I travel quite a bit, and I do use a GPS, but I don't trust it. I need to look at a map ahead of time. Just because that thing tells me to go so many kilometers and turn left or right or whatever, before I go, I look at a map. I like to have a visual in my mind as where that thing's going to take me. It is very helpful in time of arrival and how much time I need to calculate. But as far as just trusting that thing, they've known to fail. But even if they wouldn't fail, I think I would still want to see a map. Someone tells me, go this way, go that way, turn left, turn right. I say, can you sketch it for me? I like to see a visual. And so geometry helps us in that. Now, we could probably do all the rest of the period just on this one. I'm not going to have time. Studying the left brain, right brain. I don't know if you've ever studied that, but there's a difference in how our brains are wired as to how we focus on problem solving, for example. The difference between geometry and algebra. How many of you, maybe that's not a fair question, I was going to say, how many of you prefer geometry over algebra? Okay? And algebra over geometry. Some of you may be neutral. Algebra over geometry. Okay, there's a difference in which one will go off the left brain and which one will go off on the right brain. I have more on that later if we have time. If we don't get to it, study it. Do some study on left brain, right brain, algebra versus geometry. And it was interesting to me to find, even though I taught algebra and geometry for many years, to find that research has shown that rarely do you find a student who likes them equal, who enjoys algebra and geometry equally. They either have a strong leaning toward the one side or a strong leaning toward the other side. And I found that very interesting. And as we study this more, I think we'll find out why. Now, some creative uses of geometry. I already mentioned engineering, and I'd like to just talk about that a little bit. Even though they are no longer there, the World Trade Center towers, when I first was on top of those towers and looked at them, etc. But then, how many of you have been to the St. Louis Arch? There, I went through that facility one time, and I marveled at all they were telling us there. That thing was built from, of course, from the ground up, I was going to say. But they started on both sides, and they kept coming up. And the guy there told us that when they got up to the last piece, they just had to pry it apart a little bit, and they put that last puzzle piece in, and it just kind of locked it in there. But what would have happened if they had come up and gone like this? And what kept them from doing that? He told us that they measured off the stars. That was done before the computers that we have today, but they measured off the stars. At night, they would get a reckoning, and so when they got up there, they met. You know, it wasn't any of this, you know, pulling it together, but just pulled it apart a little bit, put the last keystone in there, and it fit. A lot of geometry went into that, and taking it off the stars, etc., the last piece. I mentioned the Opera House in Sydney. Architects do some very creative thinking, and then they leave it up to the others to put the pieces together. Our thinking skills, we go on the outline to thinking logically, learning to think logically. This is very important in life, as not everything is easy nor understandable. When thinking logically, difficult pieces can come together. Quoting James Nichol here, he said, "Most of the so-called geometry books now used in schools are not agents of culture, wisdom, or even education. However, but opportunities to exercise students in the use of pocket calculators." Now, that's maybe a bit tongue-in-cheek. I'm not sure if it was meant to be tongue-in-cheek, but I think we will find it is that way. So we think about that. Even geometry taught in schools, most schools today, doesn't do what it did in the past as far as our logic and thinking skills. And some students, how many of you teach high school students? Okay, we have a few high school teachers here. When you get into high school geometry, you get into proofs in problem solving, etc., and you may wonder, what does that have to do with area and space and so on? But it's mainly there to help you to look at a problem and solve it in steps. How do I get from point A to point B? And we'll look at that a bit. But what I really like to get here today is the heart of our Creator. The Fibonacci number sequence has amazed me for years. And basically what it is, if you haven't studied it, if you take 1 plus 1, you get 2. If you take 1 plus 2, you get 3. 2 plus 5, 2 plus 3 is 5. 3 plus 5 is 8, and you keep going. Now, you might look at that and say, that's neat. That's some nice math. But this wasn't contrived by any mathematician, but rather it was discovered. It was discovered because God has it in creation. And I'd just like to open up your folder of thinking a little bit here today and look at some of that and see how it fits together. Now, this one is not in concrete, but the petals on flowers. Many flowers have petals in Fibonacci numbers. Now, not exclusively. You will find some flowers with, say, 4 petals or 6. But I'd like for you to go out to your flower gardens and look and start counting the different kinds of flowers and count their petals and see if they aren't indeed Fibonacci numbers. It happens again and again and again. Not exclusively. But I'd like for us to see the balance that God put in nature by using flowers. Spirals in a pineapple, pine cones, nautilus shells, etc. There you see a pine cone, and I don't know how clear that is. Can you see? Okay. Let me go to this side. There are dual spirals. We see a spiral coming down this way, and then you see a spiral coming the other way. And when you look at pineapples and you look at pine cones, etc., the number of spirals going clockwise versus the number ones going counterclockwise are Fibonacci numbers in the sequence. So there'll be, well, it'd be a very small one, 2 and 3, but let's say 5 and 8, etc. And so you'll find that, and I'll do some counting on some of them later. The spirals of a rose, now these are not Fibonacci, but again, I'm showing you the creative design of our Creator and all that He put in something like a rose. The nautilus shell. Now this is a cross section. This is a nautilus shell that is cut in half, and you see the inside of it. I tried to buy one to bring along to actually put it in your hands, but they're quite expensive. I looked at a few different places. But you get a bit of a picture there, and we're going to work with that spiral a bit later also. A sunflower. You have, again, just like you do on a pineapple or a pine cone, you have those spirals. And then let's go to outer space. You go to outer space, and the galaxies are in spirals. Now, a bit later, I'm going to try and take you from the Fibonacci numbers to these spirals and show you that they're related as well. The eye of a hurricane. This was an internet news account of the one of the recent hurricanes that we had in the southeast there. And you see the spirals there as it's coming around. And then look at this. Compare the spirals of a hurricane with the spirals of a galaxy. Isn't that amazing how God has worked all this together? Some more pine cones, and then I'll go on. Here's a series of slides where someone took a marker and showed you the spirals. Now, if you count them, the clockwise rotation starting up in that corner, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And if you look at the counterclockwise on the same pine cone in the yellow, there are 13. Did that just happen? Or is there some substance to that in how they all work together? Let me interrupt myself and walk over here to this little board. Let's take that square as our base. Okay, let's count that as a 1. And then if I enlarge that with another 1, there's Fibonacci. Now, put a square, 1 plus 1 is 2, so let's put a square out here and call that 2. You see where I'm getting my numbers? Okay, now what's 1 plus 2?
3.
3, okay. So we put a 3 here. 3 plus 2 is, mark that, 5. 5 plus 2 plus 1 is 8. 8 plus 1 plus 1 plus 3, or 8 plus 5 is? And now I'm going to run off my board. And if I had room, what would I get up across here? 21. And you could, if I had a big board and I had it blocked here, I could just keep going. Now, that is growing the Fibonacci numbers. But if I start here and just go from corner to corner, what do I get? I get the spiral. So there we're tying together God's design in spirals with the Fibonacci numbers. Now, there's other relationships we can do also. I think I'll stop with that for now and come back to the outline. The golden rectangle. Let's look at the golden rectangle a bit. You have there on the bottom, on your second page, let's look at this set of numbers. If you take the Fibonacci numbers and divide the next larger one into it, or the next smaller one, 2 divided by 1 is 2, 3 divided by 2 is 1.5, so 5 and 3, 8 and 5, 13 and 8, 21 and 13, notice we're always going across, 30, and we go on. Notice the numbers here and what they're getting close to. And what we're coming close to is a number having to do about 1.618. And that is what they call the ratio of the golden rectangle. Now, again, it's derived off of the Fibonacci number sequence. Now, I'm not a designer by any stretch of the imagination, but they tell me that people that design things like pictures and art and so on recognize this ratio of length and width. I'm told web designers now, when their little things off to the side, you know, they want everything pleasing to catch the eye. That's what it's all about. So to get your eye to go through it and relax and lock into something, the golden rectangle is more pleasing to the eye, and it's catching in art and design and advertising and all of that. Now, they didn't think that up. It's, again, part of God's design in the Fibonacci numbers and how they all fit together. Okay, I've spoken long enough without giving you a time. This is a workshop. Is there anything you'd like to add to this discussion? I know there's a depth of knowledge in this group here, and I'm sure some of you have studied it maybe more than I have. Is there anything you'd like to share with the group? Another aspect, another branch going out from Fibonacci or the golden rectangle or spirals, etc. Anything you'd like to share? Someone gave me a tip at lunch that it's always hard to get the first one to speak up. So the first one, you don't have to talk. Let's have the second person. Who wants to be second? We skipped the first one. Go ahead.
Well, the relationship that a circumference has to the diameter in a circle.
Okay.
Is one.
Okay, excellent. We're going to get to that in a little later. And if you have more to add on that, please do so. The relationship of a diameter, radius, circumference, etc. Interesting. Okay. Others? Do any of these principles, like diameter to circumference, ever not work? Have you ever found any circles that... See, that's where God comes in. God is a God of order, a God of exactness. And geometry and math, and maybe I'm overflowing into general math in some of these ideas, but it's all wrapped up in God. Yes?
Another one is the Pythagorean theorem.
Okay. We're not going to have time for that one. Maybe I should. One of my grandsons came up here with me, and he's in eighth grade, and I asked him, what are you learning in math this year? And he said, the Pythagorean theorem. And so we talked about that for a while. Very practical. I said, how are you going to use it in life? You know, so often we hear people say, "How I'll never use this in life." Well, I gave him this illustration. We put a deck on our house a number of years ago, and I got some of my high school students to help me. And, you know, I had all the joists going out from the house and then support. But I said, you know, we want to make sure that these are all perpendicular to the house. So I had them measure out. I said, remember Pythagorean theorem? And it took a little jogging of their minds, but it came back. I said, we're going to put it to use here. And so we measured out, and we measured across, and we went across the hypotenuse. And then we pulled the thing. I had a come along because it was off a little bit. So I put a come along to the corners and pulled the thing until it was just right. And then we put our boards down, the floorboards, and that locked it in. So there are ways that you use this math and geometry, etc. It's not just something we do to fill up their time, even though they think we might. There are purposes in why we're teaching these things. And so the more that you can get down to the practical, or do things like this, or things like this, show them what geometry and math is all about, so that we're not just working with bare numbers that have no meaning, etc. Okay, anyone else?
Let's. I'm going to say we're 8.5 by 11.
Okay, why is it?
I don't know.
Do the math. I didn't. Does someone have a calculator or mental math? Yes.
I'm just asking, is that something to do with is it called a golden rectangle?
I'm wondering. I see a calculator back there. I didn't figure that one. Take 11.5 divided by 8.5.
It's not 8 to 13. It's 8.5 by 11.
You're right. You're right. 8 by 13 would be more pleasing, you're thinking.
No, 8.5 by 11.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. If you're talking about web pages and so on.
Yes.
Maybe we can make the books better for our students.
What do you get?
1.29.
Okay. It's not 1.8. Henry.
What about the European paper? Is that more pleasing or less pleasing than ours?
What's their size? I didn't.
It's a metric size. I don't know the dimensions. It's a little longer and a little narrower.
Okay.
Legal paper. Legal paper. 8 by 14.
That would be close. Yes, okay. Yeah, good question. Maybe this was done before web design. I'm sure it was because, you know, paper has been this size since you and I went to school, hasn't it?
Yeah, I just didn't know why.
Yeah, okay, good question. Anyone else?
Legal paper comes out to 1.4.
There you go, legal size. Mm-hmm. Okay, yes.
I have a question about these triangles and the spiral.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is there a relation between the size of one and the next one smaller? Like, is there a certain...
Well, it's what we did there, but you can also see there on your handout, each one of those, in this particular figure, is a golden triangle. And so if you take a square out of the golden rectangle, you know, if you take a square out, what's remaining? If you're going the other way, if you're going from a golden rectangle that's huge and you take a square out of it, the resulting rectangle will still be a golden rectangle. And then you take a square out of that one and it will again be a golden rectangle. Take a square and you just keep chopping it up until you get down. That's doing the reverse of what I did over there. But it'll work in that direction as well. Without using the Fibonacci numbers, if you start with a golden rectangle, you just keep chopping squares off of them, and you'll end up with something like this, and you'll end up with a spiral. Okay? You're thinking. Very good. Let's go to page 3, hexagons. Why does a bee make its shells, its hives, and store honey in hexagons? Now, if you look at... If the bee would have used circles, there's gaps. And there's two things here. One is the bee gets the most volume out of using hexagons and also the most strength. Volume and strength, utilizing the space in both of those comes out. A real picture of one and then a drawing of how those all work together. Just interesting things from creation. Snowflakes. Now, this is not a spiral or a rectangle, but snowflakes, we're told, there are no two alike. So I went to a website, snowcrystals.com, where a man just takes pictures and pictures of snowflakes, and I'll just give you a few of them here just to give you an idea of some of the intricate patterns that God has designed into snowflakes. And remember, at least as far as we know, when he made this snowflake, he threw the pattern away, and the next one that came down was a different pattern. Now, none of us can prove that because we have never lined them all up to say, ah, here's a duplicate. But it seems like there's no duplicates. So God has a pattern book that must be astounding. How many snowflakes in 5 centimeters of snow, for example? And this happens year after year and worldwide. And it just goes on. And so that brings me to this point, infinity. I'd like for us to think of infinity and eternity and God and how this all works together. God is not subject to any limitations. And when we think of geometry, we often think in infinity. Now, for you that are teaching geometry, and I realize your lower grade students may not understand it, but I would like for you to at least a little, here a little, there a little, here a little, there a little, start teaching infinity with geometry. God has no limitations. He knows no limitations, which simply means you cannot add to God and you cannot take away from God. No matter how much you add to him, it hasn't added to him. He is still infinite. Now, let's try and wrap our brains around that if we can. And maybe this will help you even in teaching. You know, sometimes we struggle in teaching the doctrine of the Holy Spirit. And the Trinity is what I meant. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. How do you get around that? How does 1 plus 1 plus 1 equal 1? Well, mathematically it doesn't. But if you do it this way, 1 infinity plus 1 infinity plus a third infinity still equals what? Infinity. And so 3 infinite beings added together make 1 infinite being. I don't know if that helps or not, but that's one way you can look at it as you think of God and infinity. Now, when you teach a line, the definition of a line, you have it on your handout here. So let's go to the handout. Teachers, how often do you tell your students, especially lower grade teachers, please draw a straight line? We do that, don't we? Is it possible to draw a crooked line? Huh? See, this is very technical, but it's so true. You cannot draw a crooked line because by definition, a line is simply the distance, the shortest distance between 2 points. And so when you draw the shortest distance between 2 points, it is straight. There is no getting around it. The other thing you should not say, or I won't get technical on this, but you cannot tell your student and be accurate, draw a line 5 inches long. You cannot draw a line 5 inches long because a line, again, by definition, is infinite. It goes to eternity both directions. Now, I'm not suggesting you get technical in first and second grade and say draw a line segment, but if you would do that, you would help your high school teachers a whole lot. Because when the high school teachers and middle grade teachers come along and start teaching these principles, they have to undo those presuppositions. And it probably wouldn't be much harder for you to tell your first and second graders, okay, we're going to draw a line segment 5 inches long, etc. So think about that. A ray, then, is a going just in one direction. Starting at a point, going in any direction to infinity. Now here's some brain stretchers you can take back to your class if you wish. Number one, if a line going to infinity in both directions, which is the definition of a line, an array starting here and going to infinity that way, which line is longer and by how much? Jesse.
That goes beyond my understanding.
Okay.
There, if they're both in infinite and one starts here, then it has to come back to here if it's infinite. I don't know.
No, it only goes in one direction. Yeah, those things do boggle our minds. No, we can't. We can't quite wrap around it. But am I correct in saying that technically they're both the same? In other words, infinity is not measurable. And so, number two there, which is larger, the set of even numbers or the set of whole numbers? We like to say, well, the set of whole numbers is twice as big as the set of even numbers. But we can't say that either, can we? Or the third one, if you add all the whole numbers together with all the odd numbers, which is larger? The combined set or the set of even numbers? And, you know, we could go all day like that, but that's infinity. And that's God. Let's go to circles. Pi. Someone mentioned here the properties of pi. And the digits of pi. Pi is a little like snowflakes. Pi is a constant that we use, referring to the first letter of the Greek word periphery, and maybe perimeter. Now, when we talk about a circle, we talk about the perimeter of a square, the perimeter of a rectangle, but then when we talk about the distance around a circumference, I'm sorry, around a circle, we call it circumference, which it is. But here again, I wonder if we wouldn't be better off teaching some of our younger students that a circumference is also a perimeter. I tell students that the best way to remember perimeter is a fence around anything, the distance out around. And so when we're looking at circles, the history of pi, no, the digits of pi, let me go there. I went online and there's a site there that has the digits of pi, and they're just pages and pages and pages of digits. And there's a record in the Guinness Book of Records of a man who memorized the digits of pi, and he's from China, and he memorized the digits of pi to 67,890 digits. And it took him 24 hours and 4 minutes to do that. Now, first of all, I say, well, what a waste of time. But be that as it may, here's another page of them. And they're just pages and pages, and they're so small you can't read them. But this is all digits, and they don't repeat. They don't repeat. They just go on and on. History of pi was known already in the Bible. 1 Kings 7:23, and he made a molten sea, 10 cubits from the one brim to the other. It was round all about, and its height was 5 cubits, and a line of 30 cubits did compass it about. And so we have a circumference of 30 cubits, and we have 10 cubits from one brim to another. So there already we had a rough pi estimate of 3. And, you know, 3.14 and whatever you want to go on the digits from there on. Sometimes students get bored with some of this. I found a book recently, and I'm not going to read it, but especially if you have middle-aged students, maybe third or fourth graders, there's this book called Circumference and the First Round Table. Now, it's a parody on King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. And I'll just read a paragraph or an explanation of it that I found. It said, this math story tells how Sir Conference, S-I-R, Conference, his wife, the Lady of Dye of Amador, and their son, Radius, solved the problems of the king's table. King Arthur and his knights needed to have a council of the strongest and bravest knights to discuss the problem of a neighboring kingdom preparing for war. But there was a problem with the table around which they met. At first it was too long and had too many sides. Other table designs produced more objections. Then they hired Geo of Metri to make tables in several shapes before a round table solved all the problems. This sharp-minded team eventually designed the perfect table conducive to discussing the peace plan where everyone was comfortable and felt on equal standing. Now, I don't think you'll ever see that in a CLP catalog, But it's one of those little secular books that, you know, can just kind of liven up a discussion someday, especially when they get bogged down with geometry and some of the things that go with that. There's a series of these books, if you're interested, that not all on geometry, but there are various math topics that follow the same basis. I started out by saying that math is a study of, or geometry is a study of the measurement of the earth. Eratosthenes, many years ago in Egypt, estimated the circumference of the earth. Now, he could not take a tape measure around it and measure the earth, but he was intrigued about the earth, and he wanted to find out how big it was. And so he did this. He had a well, an open well, and he waited until the sun was directly overhead, and he could tell that by how the rays of the sun shone down through the well equally. You know, so it had to be the right time of year and the right time of day for that to happen, you know, directly overhead. And so at noon during the summer solstice, when the sun shone straight down into the well, proving that the sun was directly overhead, he measured the angle between the sun's rays and a tall obelisk at Alexandria. So he was at this point, and he had someone at Alexandria, which wasn't directly overhead, measure the angle of the sun's rays. I tried to sketch it here for you like that. So the obelisk at Alexandria had a 7.5 degree, where here in the well, down to the center of the earth. And so then he measured the distance. He knew the distance from this well to the obelisk in Alexandria. And from that distance, he took 7.5 is what fraction of 360 degrees? Are you with me? Which came to about 1/48. So he took 48 times the distance from here to here, and that gave him an estimate of the circumference of the earth. And he came up with a figure of 24,000 miles. And today we figure the circumference of the earth at the equator at about 24.9. Now, he did it just like this. Again, no computer, everything just measurement and math, et cetera, from there. Right brain, left brain. The left hemisphere of the brain is dominant in using logic and symbols and language, while the right hemisphere deals with spatial, creative, and musical processing. So your artists, your musicians, etc., are usually your right-brained individuals. Algebra is usually a left-brain pursuit, while geometry is a right brain. I'll let you think about that. I'm not going to go into more detail with that. Now, in the closing minute here, you have on your workshop there some things about logic statements, which just a few of you are in high school math, so I won't go into that. I would just like to say this about proofs. So I help a number of homeschoolers, et cetera, with tutoring. And unfortunately, it's over the phone, and so I don't have a chalkboard or anything. But I would just like to give you this illustration and this caution. If you are teaching high school proofs, be very careful at how you grade them. Let me use a city with blocks. So I have streets running north and south. I have streets running east and west. And I'm down in this corner. I'll call this point A. I'll call this point B. Now, if none of these are one-way streets, I can go from point A to point B by first going north and then across, or I can go east and then north. I can maybe go north one block, east, north. There are so many different ways that I can use to get from point A to point B. Is any of them incorrect? So what I'm saying is when you're grading proofs, keep that in mind. They may have a logical answer. And so you may have marked it wrong because it wasn't what the answer book said. So watch that carefully. That's probably the biggest thing that I find that teachers that have not had a formal education in geometry and homeschool parents grapple with in teaching their children geometry is they don't get the same answers that the answer book had. If we would put all the answers in the answer book that are possible, I mean, it would be a huge book. So there are various ways in which you can go from point A to point B. The rest of your handout is just nothing new, something that all of you have. I just tacked it on there for your information, etc. So I think that's all we will do. Some things you can do there for understanding and for enlightening and enlarging in the study of geometry. Okay, I think we have a break coming up. And is there a snack? I think I heard something about a snack. Okay, you're dismissed.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.